So I thought, since today's the last day that we're going over the 10th canto, that we would sing the different names of Krishna that cover pastimes that he's done in the 10th canto also. So let's first just read the translation together. Lord Krishna is the beloved son of Mother Yashoda, the transcendental lover in the mind of Raja, the delight of Gokula, Prana, and the name of Krishna, the wealth of the lives of the gopis. He steals the mind of even Cupid and punishes the pious serpent. These pure holy names of Lord Hari are full of sweet nectarian pastimes. Krishna is the Lord of the 12 forests of Gaja. He is the ever youthful and the best of lovers. He is always playing on the flute, and he is an excellent dancer. Krishna is the protector of the inhabitants of Raja, the destroyer of various Islamic dynasties, the keeper and tender of Nandamaraj's towers, the giver of pleasure to the cows, land, and spiritual senses, the husband of the goddess of fortune, the butter thief, and the beautiful power of Nandamaraj. This one has, see, the husband of the goddess of fortune is pretty much the only one that's not Vrindavan-based. Krishna wanders along the banks of the river Yamuna. He sold the garments of the young damsel of Raja who were bathing there. He delights in the mellows of the rasa dance. He is very merciful, the lover and beloved of Srimati Radharani, the great dancer of Vrindavan, and the shelter and only refuge of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. So we're very fortunate that we have access to all these intimate names of Krishna. Because we, various traditions around the world, they have titles for God, names for God, but oftentimes they're titles of awe. They're like, for example, Sir or Master, Mister, those kind of terms. And we have intimate names describing Krishna's personal characteristics. So that's what we're going to sing today. And actually, just for this part. Yashomati Nandana Vrajavara Nagara Gokula Nandana
Thank you.
Yaduvada Parishat Sarv Dorpirasyana Dharmam
Jayati Janani Vaso Devaki Janma Vado Yaduvada Parishat Sarv Dorpirasyana Dharmam
Stidachara Vijinagna Susmita Shimukena Rajapura Vanitanam Vardhayan Kamadevam
Stirajaram Vrijinagna Susmita Shimukena Rajapura
Vrijinagna Susmita Shimukena Rajapura Vanitanam Vardhayan Kamadevam
Srirachara Vrijinagna Susmita Shimukena Rajapura Vanitanam Vardhayan Kamadevam.
Are there any words that you recognize?
Janma.
Devaki. Kama. Kamadev.
So Devaki Janma. So what do you... Devaki Janma Vado. That's an interesting one because it doesn't mean the son of Devaki. It means one who appears from Devaki, which distinguishes Krishna. He doesn't actually have a mother and father, but he appears as though he has a mother and father. That's why he Shukadeva Goswami specifically said that. And then the bottom one, Kamadevam. So he is the one from whom Kama came from. The Cupid. Kama is Cupid. Right? So Krishna's from Krishna comes Cupid. So this is the translation. Lord Shri Krishna is he who is known as Jananivasa, the ultimate resort of all living entities, and who is also known as Devaki Nandana or Yashoda Nandana, the son of Devaki and Yashoda. He is the guide of the Yadu dynasty, and with his mighty arms, he kills everything inauspicious, as well as every man who is impious. By his presence, he destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert. His blissful, smiling face always increases the lusty desires of the gopis of Vrindavan. May he be all glorious and happy. I forgot. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So what I did here is I took selections of the purport. It's really long, so we will have a few readers. Trisha, you'll start. Do you have a microphone?
Yes. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, Srila Sukadeva Goswami has composed this beautiful verse to console those who lament the fact that Lord Krishna did not continue to manifest his intimate pastimes down to the present times. Here Sri Sukadeva reminds his listeners that the Lord is eternally present in this world, in his holy abode, his name and the recitation of his glories. This idea is expressed by the word Jayati. He is victorious, which is in the present tense rather than the past.
So this verse is interesting. It's saying Krishna is the son of Devaki Nanda. He is the protector, like all present tense. And so when you read, I'll show you what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary. He says, if someone says, alas, alas, what misfortune that Krishna did not continue to manifest his intimate pastimes down to the present time. To console such persons, Shukadeva Goswami has composed this beautiful verse. So by the end of the 10th canto, devotees are starting to feel this attraction to Krishna. And then the canto comes to a closure, and it can be painful, because when things end, it can create this pang in the heart. the separation. So Shukadeva Goswami is putting this in the present tense. The word Jayati, he is victorious, means that Krishna is eternally present in this world, in his holy abode, his holy name, and the recitation of his glories. This is indicated by the word Jayati, which is in the present tense, rather than the past. Isn't that interesting? So we can focus on how Krishna's present right now in our lives. These are not just stories from bygone age, over and done with. They're still continuing, and we'll talk about how they apply to our lives. Okay, so Abhi.
Srila Prabhupada explains this verse as follows in Krishna. Srila Shukadeva Goswami thus concludes his description of the super exalted position of Lord Krishna by glorifying him in the following way. O Lord Krishna, all glories unto you. You are present in everyone's heart as Paramatma. Therefore you are known as Jananivas, one who lives in everyone's heart. This does not mean, however, that Krishna has no separate existence as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So we can see in this section that Prabhupada always wants to bring back the point that Krishna is personal and he's not just everywhere, you know, diffused energy. He's a person. Okay, next one came in. I have to click it, sorry. There we go.
The Mayavadi philosophers accept the all-pervading feature of Parabrahman. When Parabrahman, or the Supreme Lord, appears, they think that he appears under the control of material nature. Because Lord Krishna appeared as the son of Devaki, the Mayavadi philosophers accept Krishna to be an ordinary living entity who takes birth within this material world. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami warns them, Devaki Janma Vada, which means that although Krishna is famous as the son of Devaki, actually he is the super soul, or the all-pervading Supreme Personality of God.
So we touched on that earlier. Even though Krishna is appearing as a son of Devaki or Yashoda, he's not actually born in this world like we are. Amrita, you want to take the
next one? Sukadev Goswami that glorifies the Lord as one who is honored by the Yadu Vada Parishat, the assembly house of the Yadu dynasty, and as a killer of different kinds of demons. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could have killed all the demons by employing his different material energies, but he wanted to kill them personally in order to give them salvation. There was no need of Krishna's coming to this material world to kill the demons. Simply by his willing, many hundreds and thousands of demons could have been killed without his personal endeavor.
So what are your thoughts on this? Do you feel that if Krishna could have done it by his will, why did he come and do it personally? If he could have just, you know, done it, yes.
He needed to burn the calories.
He needed to burn the calories. That's the most creative answer I've ever
heard. To reciprocate with his devotees, I mean, that's ultimately why Krishna comes, like it was saying in the purport and Prabhupada so many times, the external energy Durga can handle all that very nicely. She can create, she can maintain, and she can destroy. So Krishna comes to reciprocate with his devotees and to enact amorous pastimes to attract all living entities in the material world.
Yeah, it's very true. So he wants to create a story that will appeal to the conditioned living entities and attract them to his qualities, yes. Do you have a
Well, he also did it for the benefit of those he killed. The benefit of those he killed, you say. They also had prior relationship with Krishna, maybe inimical, maybe not, but if it's even inimical, they're Krishna conscious. And they were very Krishna conscious entities, and at least they might not have, at least they got salvation out of it.
Yeah.
And if you just use his material energy, they just get a crematorium out of it, nothing.
Right. Yeah. Okay, the next, yeah.
Krishna likes to fight, Krishna likes to wrestle. And there's no demons in the spiritual world. So he's got nothing here to have that fun.
That's a very good point, yeah. There's actually descriptions by the Acharyas that this world is part of Krishna's pastimes in a unique way, because when Krishna comes to this world, he looks even more beautiful against the background of this dark world. So his pastimes here are very attractive because there's that contrast. Okay.
I was wondering about that, because I feel like that Krishna was like, I mean, the thing that we have fallen, you know, that Krishna's like, oh, I have these people that just want to enjoy it, not me, so I have to, not have to, but I create this world for them. But on the other time, it's another thing you're saying, he wants to fight and stuff. So it seems like this is like necessary for, like, this is what you want it, actually, is this material world.
It's one of those simultaneously one of different kind of topics where it's not necessarily or, but it's and. Because on one hand, you can say Krishna doesn't want any of us to be here. He wants us all to be in this spiritual world. On the other hand, this world has its... the beautiful parts of this world make it so that we can engage conditioned living entities in rediscovering Krishna, which is a wonderful thing, too. So there's something special about that as well. So it's both. Okay. And then...
But actually, he descended for his pure devotees to play as a child with Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, and to give pleasure to the inhabitants of Gorkha. By killing the demons and by giving protection to the devotees, Lord Krishna established the real religious principles, which is simply love of God. By following the factual religious principles of love of God, even the living entities known as Sthirachara were also delivered from all material contamination and were transferred to the spiritual kingdom. Sthira means the trees and plants, which cannot move, and chara means the moving animals, especially the cows. When Krishna was present, he delivered all the trees, monkeys, and other plants and animals who happened to see him and serve him, both in Vrindavan and Gorkha.
So there's different kinds of monkeys in Vrindavan and Gorkha. Vrindavan has a lot of monkeys. When you go there, you'll experience them. And I remember the first time I went there, I thought, wow, these monkeys kind of, they don't look like what I thought they did in the... You know when you read about Krishna feeding the monkeys? I was like, oh, these monkeys don't look very impressive. But then later, as I went on to visit Vrindavan several times later, more recently, I was actually appreciating Krishna for being so kind, even to some animal that doesn't appeal so much to the senses. You know, it's a kind of a interesting animal, you could say, but Krishna was so fun-loving that he even engaged those animals and gave them butter, and he made that, the pastimes like that. So this is just describing Krishna dealing with all different living entities and how he helps them along. And then there's one more, actually. And who wants to read this one?
Lord Krishna is especially glorified for giving pleasure to the gopis and the queens of Dwarka. Shukadeva Goswami glorifies Lord Krishna for his enchanting smile by which he enchanted not only the gopis of Vrindavan, but also the queens of Dwarka. The exact words used in this connection are Vardayan Kamadeva. In Vrindavan, as the boyfriend of many gopis, and in Dwarka, as the husband of many queens, Krishna increased their lusty desires to enjoy with him. For God realization or self realization, one generally has to undergo severe austerities and penances for many, many thousands of years. And then it may be possible to realize God. But the gopis and the queens of Dwarka, simply by enhancing their lusty desires to enjoy Krishna as their boyfriend or husband, receive the highest type of salvation.
So this, I don't know if you followed this, but the first part of the purport was by the disciples of Prabhupada, and then quoting Prabhupada from Krishna book. And in the Krishna book, Prabhupada talks over and over and over about how the lust, supposed lust of the gopis or the queens of Dwarka, is completely opposite of the lust that we experience in this world. So So that's something that Prabhupada covers a lot, just to make it clear to us. It's not, we're using the same word, but it's totally opposite. So, so now I want to bring this back to our lives. Sometimes when we're hearing the different names of Krishna, descriptions of Krishna, it doesn't necessarily impact our life today. For example, Krishna is the son of Devaki. It might be a concept, but not a something that we can really experience in our life right now. So there's some things, there's a few parts of this verse that do relate very much to us. And I want to go over those parts of the verse, okay? So the first one, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was saying, that when we feel separation, we can read this verse and know that Krishna is still present. So we all experience some separation in our lives, right? Have you? Yeah? Some of that grief of separation, and when things come to an end. One thing that Indradhuma Swami says a lot is, because he travels in Poland, he does these festivals, and at the end of the festival day, he'll say, the only good thing about saying goodbye is that you can say hello again in the future. So that kind of idea. And so revisiting Krishna's pastimes over and over through the 10th canto is something that we can do to alleviate any kind of separation they feel from Krishna. The next point that was covered is how Krishna is Jananivasa. Oh, sorry, Jayati. So Jayati is the last part there. May he be all glorious. Jayati, we say that all the time. Jai. We say it a lot at Krishna house too. Just for like, oh, pizza today. Jai. So what it means is all glories. So all glories to the pizza. Like that. So all glories in the present tense. So when we think of Krishna, one of his characteristics is all victorious. That's what it means. Jaya, victory. Jaya Pataka Maharaj. His name is Victory Flag Maharaj. And Prabhupada named him actually a very fitting name because he does such incredible services. Victory Flag. So when we think of someone who is victorious, Krishna is victorious, when we are connected to Krishna, what do we become?
Victorious
also. So if we're ever feel, has anybody here in this room ever felt a little hopeless in their spiritual life? Yeah? Just a moment of feeling, oh boy, how am I ever going to get there? How am I going to do this? I think it's happened to all of us. We might have faith that Krishna is powerful and that Krishna is the absolute truth, but as far as my own spiritual life, I don't think I'll be able to pass these mountains. It's kind of that feeling. So when we think of Krishna as the all-victorious one, we can meditate on how Krishna is going to give us victory as well, because when we're connected with him, we are going to be successful. And sometimes this low self-esteem or low self-confidence when it comes to spiritual life. Padavakanana Maharaj was giving class and he said, this low self-confidence, spiritually, can actually be a covered over form of distrust in Krishna. So if you analyze it deeper, we don't really trust that Krishna has the ability to rescue us or save us or that the holy name is powerful enough to deliver us. There's a lack of faith there. So those things are combined together. So if we can just meditate on how Krishna has been there and is still there, creating victory in our lives, and we can see it when we look around the room, how people have come to Krishna, how he has been personally directing them in their life and brought them here, and is creating victory in their life. They're going on this amazing journey back to Krishna. The next one is, see how several times it mentions that he kills everything inauspicious? So, first it says, his mighty arms, he kills everything inauspicious, as well as every man who is impious. And then again it says, by his presence he destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert. So that's another thing that we can relate to as far as Krishna goes. there are many inauspicious things in our life. What are some examples of inauspicious things?
I mean, just like an unhealthy feeling of resentment for someone.
An unhealthy feeling of resentment towards somebody, yeah. That can be very, yeah. And by inauspicious, we're referring to something that blocks you from progressing. Inauspicious is the opposite of taking to Krishna. Yeah.
A disease?
A disease, yeah. Like a material, like a bodily disease. That could be something inauspicious, yeah. Mm-hmm. What else?
Burning
prashadam.
Sorry?
Burning prashadam?
When you're cooking.
Oh, burning, yeah, when you're cooking, yeah. Burning the pot, yeah.
Envy and jealousy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People around you who aren't supportive of your spiritual life.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah. We were talking about that yesterday with relatives that might not be so favorable. So people around you are not supportive. So all these things are inauspicious in our lives. What about just being tired? Exhausted in Bhagavatam class. So these things can be apparently little bumps in the road, in the royal road. And Krishna is the one who removes those things, particularly in the form of the holy name. So the holy name, by developing a close relationship, a friendship with the holy name in our lives, we can overcome these inauspicious things. One time, Malati was in Vrindavan. I believe she was in Vrindavan at the time, in India somewhere. And she got really sick. So she couldn't do anything except be in her room all day. And she was chanting. Prabhupada came to visit her. And Prabhupada said, he asked how she was doing. And immediately she became apologetic and said, Prabhupada, I'm so sorry, I haven't been able to do anything. I've just been chanting all day. And Prabhupada said, no! Chanting is the essence, and actually the reason I've created all these other services for you is because the American boys and girls are so restless, and so they need all these engagements to keep their mind focused on Krishna. But really the pinnacle of our spiritual life is to have such a close relationship with the holy name that we really don't need anything else to absorb us in Krishna. So we can take shelter in that aspect of Krishna, that he will remove inauspiciousness in our lives. Another thing that's really sweet is his blissful, smiling face. So that's another thing we can focus on, a little part of Krishna, a little gem in this treasure chest, that Krishna, he likes to smile. Have you noticed that in his pastimes? For example, before he spoke to Arjuna. Arjuna was, in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was explaining why he didn't want to fight and why he was so stressed out and so anxious and filled with so much distress. What was Krishna doing while he was speaking? Krishna was sweetly smiling. That's how it's described in Bhagavad Gita. And other situations too, you'll see Krishna will smile at times where the conditioned soul would be very distressed. And that smile is there to appease us and to comfort us and to also give us hope and enthusiasm. So we can focus on Krishna's smile. Then the other part of this is how Krishna is very personal. We can extract that from here. It's not directly spoken, but Krishna relates to each one of us in a unique way on our journey. And he will arrange something specifically for you to help you come to him. I'm sure all of you have seen that in your lives, right? Something will happen, almost unbelievable sequence of events that will bring you closer to Krishna. And I wanted to share with you one verse from, do you remember the story of Muchukunda? The story of, yeah? So in that chapter, there's this really nice purport. It's just a short paragraph. And it's about how Krishna works with the living entities in a very personal way. So the universe is created to gradually rectify the contaminated souls trying to exploit material nature. The Lord moves the conditioned souls along, according to their karma, through the various stages of spiritual rectification. Thus, the Lord is like a herdsman who moves the creatures under his protection to various pastures and watering spots, in order to protect them and sustain them. A further analogy is that of a doctor who moves the patient under his care to various areas of a hospital for diverse kinds of examination and treatment. Similarly, the Lord brings us through the network of material existence in a gradual cleansing process so that we can enjoy our eternal life of bliss and knowledge as his enlightened associates. So he has this journey tracked out for us spiritually. He's helping us. Sometimes when we're in a doctor, when we're in the hands of a competent doctor, he'll say, okay, now I want you to go to the blood lab to get blood work done. It's not much fun. Or something even more painful, maybe a spinal tap, something, you know. But we know that because we're in the hands of this competent doctor, each one of the places that he directs us is for the ultimate good of our healing and our long-term benefit. Similarly with Krishna, we can look at our lives and we can see how Krishna is playing a role. He's doing this wonderful thing now, and oh wow, I'm really suffering now, but it must be part of the same course of treatment, and we can trust Krishna. We can see how he's personal in our lives. Then there's this side of Krishna, that the smiling face part of Krishna, when he conquers our heart. That's another thing, another feature of Krishna that he's doing today, right now. Not in the past, but today. He's conquering hearts. And again, we can see that in the room right here. Krishna's conquering the hearts of living entities. There was one British officer, I believe, who was in India, and he was wanting to explore the different gods, so he went to the different temples to see what the gods were like. And when he came to a Krishna temple, Radha Krishna temple, he said, oh, this must be God. Do you know why? Why he said that? Yeah?
If it is the person I'm thinking of, it's because when he went to other temples, like I think it was Kalisa, he asked, oh, well, what's Kali doing? She's, she's engaged in, different works of destruction, okay? And then he went to a Shiva temple, what's he doing? He's meditating. Well, he's not the Supreme if he's meditating on something else. He should not to do any kind of spiritual practice if he's the Supreme. Kali, but then when he came to Krishna, basically, he said, oh, what is Krishna doing? Oh, he's dancing with the gopis. Oh, so he's enjoying. He must be the Supreme One. Because all he has to do is enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Krishna he said, oh, he's just playing a flute. He's not doing any work. He's just doing recreation.
Right.
So as far as our lives go, that the reason I mentioned that is because we're dealing with somebody who is not only personal, but also very fun-loving and very, very much wants us to be included in that world. So we're going towards a God who is very personal and very wonderful. And then finally, the very last part of this verse, may he be all happy. You see that? May Krishna be all happy. That stood out to me because this is the mood of a devotee wanting Krishna to be happy. And have you ever had someone in your life who's been so kind to you and so loving and attentive, some person that you just wish so much good for? Like you hope that they're going to do well in their lives. You just, it naturally pours out of your heart. You want well for that person because that person is so free of envy and so loving. So when we get to know Krishna a little, especially through the 10th canto, when we get to know him, we realize that he's a person who deserves to be happy beyond anybody else just because he's so full of love, gratitude, non-envy, acceptance. He's full of all these wonderful qualities that we see. So who deserves to be happier than Krishna, right? So that's meditation of a devotee. How can I contribute to Krishna's happiness? So then we're going to talk about what happens when you read or listen to the 10th canto. So we all just went through the 10th canto. We kind of jumped through it this semester. But it's to give us a taste to go deeper, right? So what happens when we read the 10th canto? So many of the chapters in Bhagavatam have these pala shrutis, or these fruits of hearing. That's a literal translation, fruit of hearing. It's not an expression you'll find in English, in the dictionary, like that. but it's the literal translation. So we have here fruit, that's the pala, and then the hearing, the shruti, the pala of shruti, the pala shruti, okay? The fruit of hearing. And that's the reward. That's what you read at the end of the chapter that you are going to get because you read that chapter or you heard that chapter. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he calls it the promise of success. The promise of success. So the 10th canto one, Shishti, you want to read this? This is the 10th canto one for the whole 10th canto.
By regularly hearing, chanting, and meditating on the beautiful topics of Lord Mukunda with ever-increasing sincerity, a mortal being will attain the divine kingdom of the Lord, where the inviolable power of death holds no sway. For this purpose, many persons, including great kings, abandon their mundane homes and took to the forest.
So by this regular hearing, what happens when we hear together, and especially in a group, what happens to our spiritual lives? When we're hearing in the association of devotees, our faith in Krishna develops naturally. So by this hearing, we naturally develop faith in Krishna, and it makes us want to share that. It kind of comes in and then out again through the chanting, so we want to share that with others. We're hearing it, then we're wanting to pass it on. So hearing, chanting, and then the meditation grows deeper, the meditation on Krishna also. And finally, our faith in Krishna grows so deeply, and our spiritual lives start to transform at a rapid pace until we reach this the divine kingdom of the Lord, is what it's described. And that doesn't necessarily mean that after this life we're going to reach Goloka, which it also does mean, but it can mean right in today in our present lives. And our world can transform into a spiritual world by our consciousness. So that's the polishruti of this 10th canto. And now, the last little bit that we have left, I wanted to see if anybody wants to share something that they gained from something that they particularly liked in the 10th canto. Or something maybe that was difficult for them, something you heard that might have been challenging, because we have people here who can help illuminate us if there was a pastime that was especially hard to understand, or something that you liked. Or any other question about the class, if you want to ask. Yeah. Let's use the microphone.
Yeah. So, we were talking about the gopis' lust for Krishna and how it's completely different from the lust that's here in the material world. But we use the same word. So why do we use the same word, even though there's nothing the same, apparently?
Srila Prabhupada gives the example of that. Gold is metal, and iron is metal. So we can say they're both metal. So they actually do have something in common, but they're vastly different at the same time. So the intense desire for the purpose of enjoyment, or the intense desire for the purpose of pleasing Krishna, those are both kinds of lusts, but their purpose is entirely different. Right? It's like if I gave my wife, here's an iron ring for our anniversary. It's metal, but it wouldn't work.
Thanks. And I've also heard that there's so many different words for love and attraction in Sanskrit. It's kind of an inadequate translation, really.
Yeah.
Also, they use that word because that it appears that way. It appears like that.
Yeah, from our vision, our experience in this world, it looks like lust to us. Sometimes the descriptions of Krishna's pastimes are put into terms that we can relate to. They're actually so far beyond us, but just to make it more relatable for us also, just so we know what we're...
Yeah, and you know, Prabhupada, to follow up on Gopal said, Prabhupada likes using the example of a cat you see a cat across the street playing with something in its mouth, it could be a loving kitten, or it could be literally torturing a mouse, dropping it and catching it again. You've probably seen both. So from a distance, you can't tell which it is. They look the same. So from a distance, some of Krishna's activities may look different than they are. When we scrutinize up front through the eyes of the acharyas, with devotion, you have the facility to see it. The distinction becomes obvious. Just like if there was a cat across the street, I didn't know what it was doing, but I took on binoculars, I immediately know which it was. So we need the right tools to understand it and to see. But from a distance, people say that. That's a criticism you hear. Oh, look at Krishna, he's like us. And it's sort of like almost a trick of Krishna. Well, not almost, it is, because it looks so much like something else that in order to understand it, it's paradoxical. And the purpose of paradox, be it in Christian literature or our literature, is both the same. The purpose of paradox is to make us go deeper to understand. Because we know it's not. But gosh, it looks the same. Your question is a very, very good question that the acharyas have spent a lot of time answering. But the short answer is to make us go deeper.
Amen. Do you know what amen means?
So be it.
So be it, yeah. I was thinking about that when I read the Pali Shruti also. It's like, so be it, let it be. Yes?
I'd like to add on to that a little bit also, that Srila Prabhupada also says, you know, Krishna's like the sun. So a sun spreads its rays without discrimination. And like if there's a puddle of urine out on the street, the sun will purify that. It won't become contaminated by that at all. So Krishna is the supreme pure, and whatever he comes out with here, make sure there's no sin for him, because he completely purifies all of that. Like if we go out and engage in some abominable activity, we're thrown in prison. Krishna's glorified for stealing butter. We praise him for that because he's the supreme pure. So there's just a little add on there to that.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I'm trying to remember the first of the Bhagavatam that says that by regular attendance to Srimad Bhagavatam, giving service to your devotee, all that is also to the heart is completely. But not completely.
Almost.
But I'm trying to remember why it's almost and not really.
I'll make sure I can explain
that. Yeah, or
No, I wasn't wondering that.
I've actually been wondering that myself too. Does anybody want to comment on why it says almost completely destroyed versus completely?
Yes. What I know from Dhammeshwar is it's a certain stage. When you get past that stage, and everything is completely destroyed. You're talking about a certain stage.
Okay.
Something to that effect.
Another point is that the entity always has free will. So it came to a point where we could never forget. Never fall down. That would mean we have no free will. Mm. So there's always the option. As the Tuska Shakti, the marginal energy, always has the freedom to come to Krishna or to go away. That's another way to look at it.
Was there anything else in the 10th canto that you really liked or was any pastime that you really enjoyed? Yeah.
Something related to what you said that really impacted, like I just realized, you know, how your love for Krishna depends on your relationship with the holy name.
Mm.
That's very true. Like I personally noticed that my enthusiasm really depends on how serious I am about chanting, and that day my seva will be, I will have a taste for my seva if I have, you know, chanted my rounds attentively. And I've noticed that. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you for sharing that, yeah. The 10th canto is described as the smiling face of Krishna. So the different cantos are different parts of his body, and the 10th canto we just finished is the smiling face of Krishna. So may his smile be in your life and in your day. Thank you very much.
We have a little more
time. Oh, we have more time. Okay, we'll have to go soon.
They read a lot this morning.
Okay. Okay, so anybody else want to share something? Yeah.
It sounds like what Don was talking about, that about the almost, you know, everything troublesome are almost being destroyed. The verse is talking about Naishti Bhakti, the stage of Nishta. It's where Prabhupada said 60% of your anarthas are gone at that stage. And so at that point, Prabhupada said one can you know, very naturally and peacefully remember Krishna in the mind, whereas before that, it's a big struggle. At that point, you've crossed like most of the mountain of anarthas at that point. You're more easily fixed and dedicated to Krishna. It's called unflinching faith. You know, in the beginning we have flinching faith. It gets tested. At that point, it's unflinching faith, and then from that stage, Prabhupada said devotional service comes much easier. And the other stages like ruchi, or a deep taste for Krishna consciousness, asakti, attachment, and then finally bhava, spiritual ecstasy, and then love of God. Those stages come much more quickly from that point. So again, most of the anarthas are gone by that stage. Although it's still not quite perfect, but most of the anarthas are gone there.
A little bit on the angle that Kalakanta was taking. There's a lecture by Prabhupada. I have a catalog and I can find it. In the first maybe 2 or 3 minutes of the lecture, Prabhupada says that we'll never be perfect even in our liberated state. Krishna is the only perfect person.
It reminds me of that story where Prabhupada is telling the devotees, in order to go back to God, you have to be 100% pure. And now the devotees were a little dejected. And then he kept bumping it down. I think he bumped it down to like 70%, but no less. Yeah.
One thing I had an impression from the whole experience of the 2 months we studied, that there's just so much we can't cover, even though we spent 2 months on it.
Yeah.
Really just scratching the surface. And all those pastimes are so full of beautiful nuances and meaning, like, but we didn't even get to cover some of them.
Yeah.
And then what we read in the Bhagavatam is just a tiny sliver of Krishna's pastimes. Prabhupada said that there's 60 volumes of Bhagavatam. On other planets, there are millions of volumes of Bhagavatam. So it's like an ocean, is a nice example you started with.
Yeah. Pick a drop of those.
Just in terms of particular pastimes, on the camping trip, we started reading the pastime of Krishna kidnapping Rukmini, and we continued a little bit here. And sometimes something really nice thing that stuck out was just that, where Prabhupada says that the determination Rukmini had, Prabhupada said that this determination is the only price to attain Krishna's favor. And so that was a really valuable lesson from that passage, that such determination is the only price to attain Krishna's favor. And then when we were reading it here, we were just really appreciating how everything's there in Krishna's pastimes, like, you know, like big war scenes and romance and fun, just like everything's there. It's so perfect.
And even every age, like somebody's inclined towards children, then he has children pastimes, and then he has, you know, adult. So, yeah.
You didn't have the old age
pest. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. That store forever 21. They're searching for Krishna indirectly.
But most people, when they're looking for enjoyment, they don't go to the old age. They don't naturally go there for that. So Krishna stays the age that's appealing.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Take home, I've always had from the 10th canto, is it destroys the impersonalism that's always there, every place. Because he's such a cool person, and he obviously is God as well, to do this. But he does personal things, and the whole 10th canto just nips away at the impersonalism that permeates.
Yeah, and sometimes it can be challenging for people if they have that tendency towards impersonalism. The 10th canto can be very difficult.
And we all have that.
Yeah, and we all have that. Yeah, that's true. All right, thank you very much, everybody. All right, Krishna.